As I draw close to the end of my career, this prize is not actually just a recognition of my efforts, my untiring, passionate efforts. I think it's a recognition of the importance and the role of small producers, particularly women. And that is why I dedicated this prize to the African smallholder producers who silently toil day and night to feed their families.
Okay, IFAD works mainly in rural places with smallholder farmers. What is the significance of investing in rural or smallholder farmers? Why should they be put at the center of the global goals?
Particularly SDG 1 and SDG 2 aim to eradicate poverty and end hunger by 2030. Now, the simple questions we just need to ask ourselves in response to your question: where does hunger and poverty run deepest in the world? In developing countries, 80% of the poor and hungry live in developing countries of Africa, Asia, Latin America. Where do they live in these developing countries? In urban areas? No. In rural areas? Again, three quarters of the poor are rural. What is their major source of livelihood? Agriculture. What kind of agriculture? Smallholder agriculture. What proportion of the food that is consumed in the developing world is produced by them? 80%. Do you want to eradicate poverty and hunger? Where do you go to fight an enemy? So they have to be central. Investing in them, in what they do, and in their environment is central. Otherwise, this talk of zero hunger is just talk. If we are really serious about eradicating poverty and ending hunger, we have to ensure that the rural space is transformed and smallholder agriculture is no longer just a subsistence activity for poor people, but a major component of the transformation of our food systems.
And your organization, IFAD, has been doing this for years, almost 40 years now. Is it possible to quantify the impact this kind of investment has had over those years?
It's interesting that you're asking this question. My background is in agricultural research, and I believe in data and evidence. When I joined IFAD, unfortunately, the institution was investing so much in this particular area of work, the results were not quantified. We measured our success in terms of the number of projects, the amount of money we provided, but not on the impact, the outputs from them. About 3 years ago, we then engaged in a very robust impact studies. Last year, we were able to begin to generate results, and we found that in the last 10-year period, our projects that are currently being financed and that will run until 2023 will be reaching 139 individuals, poor people, and close to about 50 families. And we also found out that the impact of our investment in terms of moving people out of poverty will not be properly measured if we use the single factor poverty line of $1.25 or $1.90. Because the majority of the population that we work with, that we invest in, are the extremely poor. They are earning perhaps less than 50 cents. When you help them in 5 to 10 years to move to $1.50 and your poverty line is $1.90, you don't capture them. So how do you measure that? You measure the accumulation of assets. What has your investment done in terms of their assets? Livestock assets, housing assets, educational assets, reduction of stunting. And this methodology now is very robust because we actually used in top institutions in this particular area to develop a methodology which now becomes a global public good, can be used by other institutions. My institution is the very first institution, whether development institution or financing institution, to develop this robust, extensive process of impact assessment. So we can tell you, if you are a co-investor, that for every dollar that you invest in a particular country, given the methodology, what you expect to get from it, how you transform people's lives and livelihoods, not in terms of only income, increase in income, but in terms of asset accumulation that helps them to build their resilience and ability to absorb shocks.